You're back with Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com for the week of October 16th, 2004. And my name is Rob Greenlee. And thanks for joining us again from all around the world. And we really work hard on this show, to keep you connected to the net. And what's happening out there around the world?
You work hard. I pretty much just eat bonbons all day. And anyway, but I'm Dana, and it's nice to have you guys back and listening to us once again. And we're joined once again by
Mitch Radcliffe,
who intends to scream a whole lot.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. He's a tech pundit. He's a blogger at the Red Herring, and he writes the Now blog. It's a daily blog, so go check out Red Herring at redherring.com and check out his blog. He's always talking about something
at
controversial.
At Radcliffe blog.
At Radcliffe blog
what are you
as well.
About right yeah. now on your blog that people can
on
go.
On my personal blog, I'm talking about the election.
Of course.
Sure, I will be offending many people, some of whom will be talking about in a few minutes.
Well, in a few minutes, we will get to that and also the news, the topics we're going to cover this week.
Google unleashes a desktop search tool.
And, of course, you can comparison shop. But do you know you comparison shop for a president at PriceGrabber.com?
Microsoft's got $20 billion in research funding on tap to look into digital media.
And Mitch is going to stay with us for another segment after we get through the news here. And we're going to talk a bit about how Google is becoming more like Yahoo.
And in our digital mailbag, we'll listen to Peter from South Africa and Patrick, who doesn't like our carry leanings.
And later in the show, we're going to talk about the new Windows Media Player 10. We're going to speak with Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager for Microsoft's Windows Media Digital Media Division. And he's going to tell us about all the cool features in the new Player 10.
What we looked at with Media Player 10 was a release where we had to address the fact that we were dealing with more mainstream consumers, right? We had to address the fact that we had to work with a variety of devices, and we had to do that very well.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to really allow people to take full advantage of these emerging online services.
Before we get into the news, I just want to take a moment. We need to address war radio. We heard back from evilgeniuschronicles.org. It's not .com.
Whom we declared war on.
Yes, we did.
And
Dave Slusher, we're after him.
This is a wartime radio program now.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
America, just keep in mind that these are serious and dedicated times and that we're out to destroy the Evil Genius Chronicles, because he's a clever guy, and he's getting in our turf.
Okay, well, Tokyo Rose, stop that right now.
Well, yeah. Well, and also he's after Dana. I mean, he's after my wife here. So this is like really warfare now.
Yeah, let's listen to what he had to say about Dana.
All right, so I've got this device that it's really new, it's brand new, it's experimental, but it actually allows me to tape the audio on the other side of my auditory nerve. So it's been fed through my cognition by the time you hear it. And this is brand new experimental stuff. You can't get this from Radio Shack. And so just to test it out, I tried running that Web Talk radio from the other day, you know, where they were talking about me, and Mitch Radcliffe and Robert and Dana Greenlee were mentioning this show. And I thought I would try replaying that and then recording what I hear. So if you recall what the clip actually sounded like a few days ago, now I want to play for you what it sounds like when I hear it.
The whole notion of production is changing, and so you've got people like this evil genius, Dave Slusher.
Mm-hmm.
Slusher. I'm not sure how he says his last name. But, you know, he just sits in front of his mic and talks for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost like a performance piece.
It is.
It doesn't necessarily have to have bumpers, and which are the musical intro
and
exit fun things.
But he has music.
Believe me, I totally agree.
He talks over the music.
I love it. It's yeah. Ira Glass, isn't it? It's great. He's so smart. He's so smart. He's so smart. He's so smart. He's so smart.
Dave sounds like a terrific guy.
He's a great guy.
Dave sounds like a terrific guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's so smart. He's so smart.
Yeah.
Ira Glass or Dave Slusher?
Oh, no.
Slusher.
Yeah. Dave, come talk to me, David. I'm your friend. We will just talk to him. Dave, come talk to me, David. I'm your friend. We will just talk to him. Dave, come talk to me, David. I'm your friend. Come talk to me, David. I'm your friend. David, I'm your friend. He's so smart.
Yeah.
There you go. And so that's the first thing like that I've ever done.
So it goes on and on like that. But there's actually an interesting dynamic. Did you notice? I won over the ladies first. Ooh, it's a lady. So Dana seems completely on my side. Rob seems a little on edge about me, which is usually how it goes. But
all right, Dave, it's you and me, man. We're going to go out back, man, and take care of this business right now.
He didn't just talk about me. Okay, talk about how
Well, I mean, he thinks he's going to win this war.
That's right.
He's a smaller guy.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, the math is going to work in our favor, too. Because we're going to trounce on him.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and then when we mail him the anthrax and the letter, it'll be no problem.
Oh, evilgeniusconsult.org, a fantastic show.
We're so much bigger than his. We're just going to drown him and you know, he's
just sound.
He's like a fly, you know. We'll just knock him off the air.
It's going to be like a wall of sound, like a
Phil
Spector experience.
And none of you guys mentioned podcasting, which, you know, he's part of that whole movement.
Well, he is. He is. He's doing a terrific job. He does a really nice
part of that whole movement,
podcast.
Yes, we are.
I think that there's an entire gestalt developing around podcasting. You know, last week I said that the Google results were up around 11,000. This week it's up around 60.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're talking about a massive wave of awareness of the inexpensive audio production and distribution capability that's breaking on the web. And so we're at war in order to drive that forward, just like the Spanish-American War. You know, remember the Maine.
Yeah, and what's got me really steamed is that I'm being viewed now as old-time media. You know, I got people posting on my website telling me that I'm like part of the old media. It bugs me. It really bugs me.
I really need to embrace a kind of heroin chic at this point, you know?
I mean,
maybe pierce an eyebrow.
I mean, it doesn't always pay to keep in your feet in both areas, you know, in the broadcast radio side and then the cutting edge cool internet side, because you know, you're going to get labeled as an old media type unless I just go all the way.
You have to,
you know,
and become an internet guy
if
only.
If you stopped wearing the top hat everywhere and smoking the cigar,
okay.
that would
probably do it then. Okay. All right.
You guys, speaking of mining the depths of information, were we? Well, Google has launched something this past week that kind of got us a little bit of an uproar in the studio.
Well, I don't know if it got Mitch up in an uproar.
I was actually happy to see it.
Anything, well, I mean, we're arguing about whether or not Google
is
infringing on our privacy in our desktop with their new desktop search tool that they released this week. And it's really kind of cool how it works, but there are some questions that Mitch and I have, and Dana was concerned about it as well because she has private stuff she has on her computer.
That boy-on-boy action I have on my computer.
Oh, no.
It's at desktop.google.com. Go find out what we're talking about.
But basically, it's a plugin that installs on your system and indexes your hard drive. So when you search on anything in Google, you also get a result within I'm not sure. I haven't installed it yet, but maybe it doesn't always happen. But if you ask it to include the content of your hard drive, including your email messages and
your
files,
your chats, all that stuff. getting indexed. Plus, it also is going to index any web page history that you have. Any web pages you go to will actually be indexed and displayed as little thumbnails. The other thing that I thought that they really missed the opportunity was integrating this technology in with their desk bar that they have, which is that little search.
Well, I think that's just the next step. But
search
the
bar
privacy concern. Let's go to the privacy concern, because I think it's an important question that consumers need to be thinking about as they think about embracing this stuff. And that is, if they're able to say, you know, we know that Dana has a chat about boy-on-boy action.
Let's just call it men-on-men. I don't want to have anybody confused. Men-on-men. Over 21.
You use the phrase.
All right.
But in any case, if they start collecting that information, or you know, the fact that you're interested in books about Degas,
that's like James, you know, Spader,
James Spader. Well, she's got lots
James
of that
Spader,
on
lots
there.
Lots of James Spader. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're going to start using that information, or potentially could, based on the very obscure language in their privacy statement, to market to you in other places. So whenever you are exposed to an AdWords ad, they may be keeping in mind that you really dig on boy-on-boy James Spader action.
Men on men.
We actually read the privacy policy that was up there as part of the service, and it was really vague about how it described what they use or how they use the information that they gather to generate the search results.
Vague means something, you know.
And keep in mind that with ORCID, if you go on ORCID and you discuss whatever you're interested in, there are communities about all sorts of things. For instance, yeah. I know Dana hosts the James Spader ORCID community. She's rolling her eyes at me. But they say, we own all this information. Anything you do in that environment, we own, and we can relate to you.
Oh, and Gmail. I'm talking about Chai Tea.
Well,
there's
the
Chai
thing.
Tea ads all over my Gmail window.
Well, what's the difference between Google doing this with Gmail or doing it on our hard drive, really? I mean, it's still personal communications.
It is. But the thing is that our hard drive is yet another place where we're just ceding that control of our privacy.
Well, and they're plowing new ground here. They're trying to create new advertising and marketing opportunities based on search. And, you know, it could be a tremendous opportunity for them if they can pull this off. But
absolutely.
You know,
I mean, I'm skeptical about their ability to go into as many different areas as they are and do it all as well as they have done search to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're looking at substantially higher expenses as a company in order to do this.
Well, they're also going to face probably some legal challenges, too, probably. That's going to cost them some money.
Well, remember, Lotus introduced a thing in 1994, I believe it was Lotus Marketplace, which was a database of everybody in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the uproar was huge, and they shut it down.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is scary. Listen, we're going to come back in just a moment. We have to take a quick break. We're going to talk a little bit about the elections and interesting comparison tool and hang in there.
This is Web Talk Radio.
My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising. I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like,
it's all, he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of, like, English.
You're back with the Web Talk Streaming Dudes. Thanks for joining us again.
Now I feel cutting edge.
I like how he said that very stilted, like, you know.
It's like President Bush in the debate where he goes,
the exaggeration.
He was very exaggerated.
And Cheney, of course. And we'll cover the internet.
All right, you guys. I'll be a little smoother next time.
All right.
Mitch Ratcliffe is here, and Dana Greenlee is here as well. And we're going to continue the conversation we've had about the news here. There's a really cool site out there. Actually, we've had him as a guest on our show before. It's at pricegrabber.com. And they're doing a comparison shopping area on their site, comparing the presidential candidates
Senate
and gubernatorial, yes, and where you can actually select which candidates that you would like to actually do side-by-side comparison. I think there's like 96 candidates that are in there.
Are you saying our candidates are kind of like just software, you know, like a good book?
Well, yeah, there's like features to each one of them.
I think of them more as like broccoli.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know you need them, but you don't necessarily want them.
Well, you have to take one anyway.
Okay, in that way,
I mean, it's kind of like taking medicine.
They're like Brussels sprouts.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like taking medicine. You don't want to have to take medicine, but you have to. Right?
Well, anyway, this is a great place at pricegrabber.com, and besides comparing,
and if you want to treat them that way,
you can look at all your candidates side by side and issues side by side.
Well, that's exactly right. It's at pricegrabber.com/election2004.php.
Oh, my God. Microsoft is spending $20 billion. I went billion? And you went, I said million, right?
Billion.
No. Oh.
Lots and lots of green cash.
Say it with a B.
Can they rain some down here on me, please? Anyway, they're going to spend it on.
They're going to do it over the next 6 years. So let's keep this in perspective. It's only somewhere in the range of about $3.2 billion a year.
Only 3.2.
What's it for?
I mean, all I want's a million of it. I mean, they can just send it our way, right? They could sponsor our show.
What is it for?
You know, they could sponsor a show. We're digital media,
okay,
right? They could spend a little bit about that.
Focus beyond the self. Focus outside of the show.
Mitch will agree with me on this point, right?
If they want to give me $1 million to stop right now, I'd be happy to.
What, to stop beating them up?
But no. Well, and, you know, look, I think that they're going to spend money on a lot of different things. And when you talk about media, they're not necessarily talking about, you know, the studio and the people in the room, but they're talking about making more that is media aware and useful. I mean,
well, this is all R&D research that they're
R&D.
Putting
so
into.
They're, you
it.
Know, yeah. they're this week they introduced a new version of the Media Center PC operating system. That's got video playback, and I believe it's got control of a whatever their TV thing is.
The media extender products and all that stuff that they have, too.
You'll see, you know, integration of RSS so that you can better control what kind of content you get when and in what order you get it played, like we've talked about on previous shows. You'll see them probably start to treat the PC as a production environment more than they have in the past. And, you know, one of the interesting things as I've looked at this podcasting thing is everybody's doing it as a Mac user. Mm-hmm. And the Mac user, the reason that's the case is the Mac has this core audio engine, which it abstracts all the audio away from the hardware. If you look at all the tools that people are using on the PC, they're going right to the card, the sound card, to grab the
mm-hmm,
audio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a very, you know, it's
a lot of conflict.
Very, very kludgy way to do it.
And well, so, and there's not much you can do to keep it from being captured.
So now on Mac.
Right. But on the Mac, it's just, I mean, you can mix streams of audio from different applications running concurrently.
Well, that would be nice if Windows supported
that.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see that kind of investment on their part. You know,
isn't it interesting?
But it's not going to take $1 billion to get that done.
You know what? They're spending a lot of that.
When you're big, it costs more to do stuff.
Well, that's true.
You know, I mean, the bill says, you know, let's stop burning the $100 bills here as we light our cigars.
How much does it cost to make a patent? Because they have 270 patents all relating
it depends.
To
well,
television
the,
and
well, the real
internet.
Cost in patents is not in yeah. filing the patent, it's but the in research. Documenting and defending that patent.
Well, and also developing things that use that patent's technology. I mean, that's the reason that they acquired these things, so they can have the full rights to develop innovative products and innovative software.
As consumers, we'll be able to use probably this stuff freely. We'll buy a little bit of software here. Isn't it nice how they do the spending of the money, and then we get to have the benefit of it, you know?
Well, gosh, that's right. Dana, you're right.
That's right.
I've never really thought about it that way.
In
fact, it justifies a monopoly.
I know.
When
you put it that way, I mean, it's
well,
like Bill is making my life – I think he paves my streets
now. She should be a Microsoft evangelist.
I love Microsoft, and everybody in this room loves Microsoft.
We
and
do,
I know
we
why.
Do, we do.
You just don't talk about well.
I what mean, Microsoft not, software do I even use? I mean, I admit, I use Office.
You have a partition set up for Microsoft software on your Apple Mac. Admit
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, I run virtual
run.
PC so that I can run a few things on the Mac, on the PC environment that I can't get on the Mac in order to try them out.
Remember, mm-hmm. Microsoft's on our show today.
Look, you know, there are a lot of smart people there. I think Bill has done, you know, wondrous things with his giving money away to solve problems all over the world. But the company isn't, you know, necessarily all that innovative. Mm-hmm. They're a fast follower in this market. Other people come up with stuff, and then they do R&D to figure out how to do it in a more efficient way.
On purpose.
That's good, and that's good.
That's on purpose.
I have no problem with the fact that Microsoft exists or that they sell a lot of PCs.
So is Google becoming more Yahoo-ish all the time? What's your thought on that, Mitch? I mean,
I think they're sticking to their knitting and being search centric, whereas I believe Yahoo's becoming a media company.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the earnings just this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo had their earnings go up about 300%, and the revenue went up about 212%, and a lot of that came from things like hot jobs and the dating services mm-hmm. that they're doing, the premium services, and then within those environments you've got advertising being placed, but it's display advertising as compared to the paid link mm-hmm. kind of stuff that you see in the Google environment. But you have to go to Yahoo to get that stuff as compared to at Google, where they're trying to sort of, you know, with the desktop thing we were talking about before, smear out into the environment in order to be able to serve search results everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think they're pursuing very, very different strategies as media companies.
Yeah.
I think Google is basically just a technology company.
Well, they are taking a different strategy into the marketplace. They're not creating like web services that are hosted by Yahoo. They're actually creating these services that integrate it into the desktop or integrate into other applications, it seems like is really their focus. But a lot of their product offerings are following along, I should say, some of the business model that Yahoo has been successful at, offering email services, offering these other types of services. It seems like that's the direction that they're going, and they're going to be able to monetize
some
of that.
Yeah, but I don't think
they're going to go about it in a different way.
I don't think you'll ever see them serving media, for instance, the way Yahoo does with their streaming services. And I don't know whether they'll even do RSS in quite the same way.
There's been a lot of talk about Google getting into searching audio files. I know there was some discussion online this past week about that, and that they're
that's going to be a while because it's complex, algorithmically.
Oh yeah, there's no question. But that's a huge area of content for Google to tap into, and it's growing. I mean, you look at podcasting and what's happening there.
It's
there's,
huge, but
there's
it's a very, very expensive undertaking. I mean, just getting down to being able to recognize 100 words for virtually anybody in the world will take a company like AT&T years and a whole lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars to get. Because, I mean, I have a slight speech impediment. And if you were trying to do a text interpretation of this, you may not be able to understand me, mm-hmm. but you might understand Dana very clearly because, you know, she enunciates so perfectly.
Squeaky girl.
Well, and that's where metadata in media files is still extremely important, and a lot of content providers aren't even
doing
anything
with that. But then you're not searching the audio. You're not searching. You're searching the metadata, and I think that's cool.
Well, and I think
that's what we did on ON24.
Well, and a lot of that metadata can be expanded now. You know, in the MP3 format, there's a new protocol now that can expand how much data can be stored in an MP3. You can even have images in there. You can have the whole transcript from whatever was talked about in that audio program.
The tags. Mm-hmm. I would hate to see that scroll through my little MP3 player.
Yeah, but getting the transcript is the expensive part.
Yeah.
It's computationally.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
The Web Talk guys present Digital Mailbag.
Dun, da, da, da.
I mean, thank you. That was very dramatic. Let's
digital. Mail bag.
We got to pull out one. Let's start with Patrick because you know we have two bookends here. First one, Patrick. You
Shall
want to read
I
that
read?
One? Yes, please.
No, he didn't say dear anything, did he? I was enjoying one of your radio archives until you revealed that you want Kerry to win the White House.
Yeah.
Your misspelled possessive entitled to your political choices, and I'm entitled to dissociate with morons. I won't be listening again. Your radio show has not passed the global test.
Oh, that's clever.
Well,
yes, you know, another example of the closing of the American mind.
Yes, it is.
This is divisiveness, and they won't even listen to somebody who doesn't agree with their political choices.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about technology, and if we do talk about our politics, hey, you know, if you can't take a joke.
And he's not listening anymore.
Well, we've been fair to the president.
Well, I don't have any problem with Patrick. I mean, he's got his opinion. He's got who he wants to vote for. I'm not going to call him a moron, even though it would be perfectly easy for me to call Patrick a moron.
That's how you would do it if you were going to.
But we're not going to go there.
We're not.
Okay.
I like it. I find humor in all negative insults. Peter from Prestige College in South Africa wrote us. He's actually written us
way
before.
Way down under.
He runs it. I believe he works with the website over there at the college. Mm-hmm. He said, I listen to your show and enjoy Mitch Radcliffe. He makes interesting and valid points about technology
Kudos.
And the latest trends on the web and James Spader.
So I see his hat kind of expanding and getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
No, I have too thick a skin for this to actually affect me in a positive way.
Okay.
Peter goes on to say, so anyone bad-mouthing him, Patrick, is probably the same guys that have no sense of humor at all. Mitch Radcliffe makes technology fun with double exclamation marks. Now, don't get me wrong.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Peter. I really do appreciate that, especially since I got several, even a posting on my blog this week telling me I was obnoxious on the show last week. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's because I screamed. And I just want to say, as I scooch back from here, if you can't take a joke...
That was good warning. Thank you. I was able to pod down there.
Well, yeah.
Also, let me mention what Peter has a question for us. He says, maybe if you don't mind, you could do me a favor, since I can't phone in, even though we don't take phone calls, Peter, because he lives in South Africa. He says he wants to ask a question of the guru in the room. That wouldn't be me. Why is the fact that here in South Africa you will have, like, for example, an ADSL 512K or a satellite 256K line for internet, but here you can only get a transfer rate about 5 to 17 KB per second.
Kilobits per second.
Thank you. Whereas in Germany, for example, you get a much better transfer rate.
Well, there's a lot of reasons that could be causing that. And I think that the number one reason is maybe the ISP that he's getting his service from is kind of cheap on the bandwidth, or there's too many users on the network sapping up all of the internet.
It's not the bandwidth that he's paying for either. It's the bandwidth to the network behind.
Yeah, behind it. Yeah, exactly.
So you could say, hey, I've got this really fast DSL connection and actually not be using very much of it because your ISP can't pass data that fast.
Exactly. So somebody's getting extremely profitable probably on your internet access, but because they're not offering enough bandwidth to keep it moving quickly.
It says it takes him 3 hours to download a 5 megabyte file.
Well, Peter, we really appreciate the things you have to say because it means that you've spent tens of hours downloading us before even spending any time listening. So we really do appreciate it.
I'd don't know if this will help, but I have a friend in Russia who I put up a lot of video on the web, and she was downloading it. And
this
it,
is the boy on boy action?
No, this is the James Spader stuff.
Ooh,
and
boy, is that a surprise?
9 hours to download a one-hour show, and then it broke right at the end. You know, so basically she lost everything. So she's recommending she used something called a FlashKit program. It's called FlashKit. It's at amazesoft.com, AmazeSoft.com. It took her 2 hours to download an hour instead of 9 hours.
What does it do? Kind of compress the data coming over the
internet? You know, I've
connection?
Never used it, but yeah, apparently. But then it plays back just fine. Hmm. So.
If it works, go
if
for
it,
it.
Go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
See, Rob and I are of a single mind on this.
Yes, we are. Boy, for once.
See, right. I could make all kinds of mental problem jokes, but thank you very much, Mitch, for being here, and I let you go back to your blogs.
Thank you very much for the emails, Peter and Patrick.
We even thank you.
Yes, we
do. I know
you're
not thinking, but if a friend of Patrick's is listening, please tell Patrick that we said he should listen some more because
he should write us some more
with people rather than a one-way monologue.
Well, and we'll talk about you on the air. So send me an email at rob@webtalkradio.com.
And if you want to comment on any of Mitch's blogs, best go to ratcliffblog.com. Don't forget to put the www in front of it.
And post comments.
Yes, I have to change my DNS.
A lot. And we also have a weblog at webtalkradio.com that conversations are going on there. You can post comments to different things that we talk about on the air right there as well.
It's actually hard to tell which ones are my blog postings on Red Herring. So if you want to address me directly.
Why is that, Mitch?
It's an editorial decision.
It's an editorial decision.
Stemming from an admiration for The Economist magazine, which has very few bylines on the news stories, none, but columnists have bylines.
So it's an anonymous post kind of a thing, huh?
Well, no, it's that when a writer writes and has been edited by the organization, they're speaking for the organization rather than as an individual writer. And it's a way of thinking about editorial stuff. But, you know,
like the royal we or something like that. So that's – anyway, if you go to redherring.com and it's
we believe that this is going quite well. This,
the now.
This podcasting thing.
But there are other people posting on the now.
Okay.
Did we actually mention Dave Slusher's website address?
Let's do that once again.
GeniusChronicles.org. Because I think last time we said EvilGeniusChronicles.com, which was totally erroneous.
It was EvilGeniusChronicles.org.
And this happens to him repeatedly. Listen to Dave talk about how many times it gets communicated as .com. So I'm really sorry, Dave.
But Dave, remember, don't sleep too soundly. We're watching you.
And if you want to find out more about podcasting,
Dave's a good source.
Probably the best site to go to other than Dave would be going to iPodder.org. And it has a history there and a little background. You get access to downloads.
Doc Searles has got some good stuff on it, too, on his site at doc.weblogs.com.
Yep. Well, thank you, Mitch, for joining us again, being on the show with us.
Спасибо большое.
Rocking the
That's
world.
That's because I'm a commie liberal.
You commie liberal. That's a that doesn't quite work, though, does it? Commie liberal?
I don't know. Somebody called me that on my blog the other day.
Mitch collects labels, so just keep thinking of weird things to call him.
Just call me any goddamn thing. I'm fine.
All right. Well, thank you, Mitch. We're going to take a break right now, but stay with us because up next we're going to be speaking with Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager for the Microsoft Windows Media Group, and he's going to tell us all about the latest upgrade to the Windows Media Player 10. And he's going to tell us all about the cool features that are in the Player 10, so you don't want to miss that. This is Web Talk Radio. Welcome back to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and I appreciate you joining me back after the break. And we have a terrific guest here on the line. We have Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager at Microsoft in their Windows Media team. And he's kind of in charge of the Windows Media Player that's just been upgraded and announced. And he's going to tell us all about some of the cool features in the Windows Media Player, which millions of people use around the world. And he's also going to tell us about the new Windows Media Player 10 Mobile for the Pocket PC platform. Mike, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
And thanks for having me on.
Why don't you tell me about your job at Microsoft as a lead product manager for Microsoft and what your day-to-day role is in the development of the Windows Media Player?
in my role, I basically am what's called a technical product manager, and I work to talk about our product and then gather feedback from folks and help funnel that back into the development team and then, you know, do a little evangelism and make sure that people understand the goodness that is the Windows Media Player.
How long have you been with Microsoft and the Windows Media Group?
So I've been with Microsoft a little over 6.5 years. I've been in Windows for roughly, I guess, just about 5 years. So I've done a various number of roles. The current role I'm in, I'm fairly new to it, but have been around the technology and around the group for, like I said, about 5 years.
Oh, okay. So what work at Microsoft did you do just prior to this position?
Prior to this position, I did some work with understanding competitive products, and for that I did enterprise stuff, understanding our enterprise customer space, and before that I actually sold to the enterprise.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you had a really strong software background, it sounds like. Well, now, you guys recently released your final version of the Windows Media 10 player. What features have you improved in the player? It seems like you guys have really added a lot of features relating to synchronization of media to, you know, like mobile devices and players and stuff. But why don't you kind of run down some of the key improvements you guys made to the player?
Sure. Really, actually, when we look at it, we kind of look at it in three buckets. I think it's interesting to step back and kind of take a look for people who aren't familiar with the evolution of digital media players and digital music devices and how we've gotten to where we are. If you look back, my first device I had was a Diamond Rio PMP300, I think is what they called it. It was 32 meg player, 32 megs,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, I had one just like that. Yeah,
with a serial interface.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I accumulated a few hundred MP3s on my system. And you know, you fast forward to today where in my house, we have a variety of devices, and we have a variety of users. Obviously, back then, I was what would we consider a geek or an influential or whatever the term you want to use is. But today, both my teenage children use the devices, and my wife uses the devices as well. And we have different devices that we use. My son has a hard drive-based player. My wife and my daughter have a flash-based player. I have a flash-based player and a hard drive-based player. So, and our media collection has grown. You know, we've ripped all the CDs in our house, which really, that number approaches about 800 CDs. So we have about 12,000 songs on our on our system at home. And they come from CDs that we've ripped, and they also have come from online services like Napster that we've legally downloaded. And so when you kind of look at that, what we looked at with Media Player 10 was a release where we had to address the fact that we were dealing with more mainstream consumers, right? We had to address the fact that we had to work with a variety of devices, and we had to do that very well.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to really allow people to take full advantage of these emerging online services. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the big buckets. If you look at the player itself, we've done a lot of work to clean up the user interface, simplify it, without taking away any of the power that users like myself or you would want to have. So all that full-featured stuff is still there. Some of the cool advances in the player, I think one of the features that users are going to be really excited about is that we have enabled for the first time without an additional download MP3 ripping.
Mm-hmm.
So we have we've licensed the Fraunhofer codec, which as many people know is one of the premier codecs for MP3, and we support all the way up to 320 kilobit per second bit rates with that codec. And beyond that, if people choose to rip an MP3, we do give them all the benefits that they get for ripping an WMA as far as you get the album art and all the artist information automatically populated for you.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we still have the WMA codec in there, and we offer solutions to everything from twice the quality of MP3 at the same file size.
Mm-hmm.
So people basically get higher quality without using as much disk space, all the way up to WMA lossless, which basically gives you mathematically lossless sound quality. So an audiophile can rip their entire music collection to their hard drive, not lose any quality, but still save, you know, about 30 to 60% of the space over just simply copying the CD. So we've done that. We've done some work to clean up the UI, make it more streamlined. In the area of devices, mm-hmm. we have, as you mentioned, done a lot of work on synchronization. And what we allow users to do now is, if they're using a device that supports the new media transfer protocol,
mm-hmm.
or they're using a flash-based device or another device that shows up as a mass storage device in Windows, we can set up synchronization relationships with those devices. So when you plug them in, the device comes online and it says, hey, how do you want to synchronize your media? And you can do it manually, and we've made a lot of improvements of the way you can queue up music and the way you could set it up to be synchronized. Or you can build these automatic relationships. And with an automatic relationship, we'll always make sure that you have the right media on your device. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite bands is the Black Crowes. And I could set up a synchronization list that says, always make sure I have the latest Black Crowes. So I plug my device in. I copy all my Black Crowes CDs down onto my device. I go out, and a new release comes out from them, and I put it onto my PC. I rip it, or I download it from MSN Music. When I plug my device back in after that, it'll automatically load that content onto my device for me because it knows it's something that I want all the time.
Oh, okay.
So that makes it super easy when you start talking about, you know, 60-gig hard drive players to ensure that you have all your favorite media all the time without having to remember, like, what CD did I copy? Is this already on there? That sort of thing. And then finally, the last bucket is around the what we're calling the digital media mall, which is a showcase for all kinds of different services. And one of the things I think that's super exciting about these new breed of services that are coming online is, one, they're more than just music. We announced earlier this week a new partnership with MLB.com, Major League Baseball. So you can go on there now and download highlights from the game last night. You can get both audio and video. Mm-hmm. Feeds. You can go to Court TV and watch live court proceedings based on their subscription services. We have subscription services now for XM Radio.
Yeah, I saw that. That's really an exciting development for you guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, a lot of people like the satellite radio. It offers a lot of really great programming, and it's another way for people to enjoy that programming. And then if you go back to just the core music services, if you look at companies like FYE and Napster, they're now offering these subscription services, and these are pretty interesting. So the way they work is, for a flat monthly fee, you basically have access to all the tracks on Napster and FYE, you know, virtually all their tracks. And this can be over a million songs. So in the case of me, I go from having, you know, 12,000 songs available to literally over a million. And those can be played back on your PC. They can be streamed across your home network to a new class of digital audio receivers using Windows Media Connect Now. Or they can be downloaded to any portable device that supports our Windows Media Digital Rights Management 10. So for $14.95 a month, for the cost of a CD, I have basically an unlimited selection of music that's available to me. And as long as I'm, you know, paying my $14.95 a month, I can listen to this music. So basically, what it means for a consumer is, if I go buy a new 20-gig hard drive player and I look at a model where I had to buy my music at 99 cents a track, it's going to cost me about $10,000 to fill up that device if that's how I chose to do it.
Sure.
With this, $14.95 a month, I could fill that device up over and over and over again. And I think it's really interesting.
Well, that's certainly a much better value, I would say.
Yeah. And the thing that goes beyond that is, so if you do find a CD that you really like, so let's say you, like, the new REM CD came out earlier this week, and I used my subscription on Napster to download it, and I've been listening to it, and I really like it. If I want to own that forever and ever, I can then go back to Napster, and for $9.95, I can buy that CD, and now I own it, right? So you can use it to try out music before you buy it. You can use it to explore new musical genres, or to go back, and I also went back, and all the music I used to listen to when I was in high school, I went back and downloaded a bunch of old 80s heavy metal, and I was listening to that one night, just kind of giggling and laughing, you know?
Sure. Are most of the file formats that are being downloaded from these services you guys are partners, are they all in the Windows Media file format, or are some of them offering the MP3 format?
These services are in the WMA service, and they choose to use WMA because we have...
What's the rights management?
We have the rights management that allows them to build these business models that allows me as a consumer to pay a small amount of money and get the music I need quickly and easily, allows the people who created the music to be paid, and allows these people to make a living providing the service for those two parties, the artists and consumers. So it's a pretty fair trade for 14 bucks a month.
So is there any limit to how many devices the media file can be transferred between, or is it all devices that have the capability of accepting a Windows Media file format?
There are certain requirements of the devices, and that's why I say it's latest generation of music devices. So today you can buy the Portable Media Center devices, and they support Windows DRM10. We've had, on Tuesday, we announced a number of devices from a variety of partners that will support this, and some will be older devices. Like if you look at the Dell DJ, they're going to provide a firmware upgrade for that device. The Rio Carbon, which was just released, Rio is committed to having an upgrade by the end of the year for those devices to play back the subscription content. So if the device supports it, you can download the music on of the device.
So I understand you guys just released the Windows Media Player 10 mobile player.
Yes.
Why don't you kind of run down with us kind of the highlights of that player. That player is obviously used in like smartphones and the pocket PCs. Why don't you tell us, can you give us a rundown on that?
Well, basically that player is, I guess you'd call it the little brother of the one that runs on your PC. Again, designed to, easily synchronize with your PC, supports Windows Media DRM 10, superb video playback capabilities on these devices, and again, a lot of polish and work done on making it easier to use and making it optimized for that, those smaller screens, be it a smartphone or a pocket PC. So I think, you know, the best way to think about it is sort of just a slimmed down version of the full player,
mm-hmm.
designed to bring a real rich media experience into the palm of your hand.
Stay with us, because after the break, we're going to continue our conversation with Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager for Microsoft's Windows Media team, and he's telling us all about the new Windows Media Player 10. This is Web Talk Radio.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk. Totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
Web Talk Radio is back on the air, and my name is Rob Greenlee. And with us still is Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager for Microsoft's Windows Media team, and he's telling us all about the new Windows Media Player 10. You can actually find out more information about the Windows Media Player at Microsoft.com or at WindowsMedia.com. So is this the same player that's in the Portable Media Center, or is there a different kind of Windows Media Player in the Media Center, or is it just the Media Center software?
So the Portable Media Center is an interesting mm-hmm. device, and no, it's while they do play the same file format, they're not necessarily the same underlying code.
Sure.
Portable Media Center is based on our Windows Mobile software,
mm-hmm.
and it basically takes the Media Center Edition user experience, which is the easy navigation through TV and video and photos mm-hmm. and music, and brings it onto these devices that have anywhere from a 20 to a 40 gig hard drive, anywhere from 3.5 to 4 inch LCD screen.
Mm-hmm.
So these portable media centers, one of these devices can store up to 80 hours of video on a 20 gig drive,
mm-hmm.
thousand photos and songs. And those are designed, you just plug those right into your Windows XP mm-hmm. Media Center Edition PC, or even a Windows XP PC that has been recording TV using something like a SnapStream Beyond TV product.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're able to take your video with you on the go, your music and your photos.
Yeah, so the Portable Media Center would work with the Windows Media Player to synchronize content, or would it work with a different software application to transfer videos? The Windows Media Player can transfer videos as well. So if there's TV shows or whatever that need to be transferred, it can go right through the player, right?
Yeah, that's actually one of the things we added to Media Player 10 was the mm-hmm. support for recorded TV.
Mm-hmm.
So if TV is on the PC, you just tell Media Player where to find it. It'll catalog it in the library, and then you can build a playlist just like you do for music. So as I was saying before, I had that Black Crowes example with the mm-hmm. music. If I have a Portable Media Center device, and my favorite TV show these days seems to be Scrub, I can make sure that my Portable Media Center always has the last three versions of Scrub. And so if a new version is recorded, it gets stored on the hard drive, Media Player finds it, gets it ready, and the next time I plug in my Portable Media Center, it just copies that file down, and then I can take that with me and watch it on the bus or... in my office when no one's looking.
Yeah, I also noticed that the Windows Media Player also supports photographs now, which is a new addition, because the old player, I don't think, supported photos, did it?
No, and again, this is that same thing. Photos is an interesting case. TV, right, if you do a recorded TV show,
mm-hmm.
I could see someone sitting down at Media Player 10 and watching a television show.
Sure.
But the photo viewing capabilities are so strong in Windows XP by itself
mm-hmm.
that we don't really think that people are going to use Media Player to view pictures. But you can use Media Player to rate pictures and to organize them into playlists and to then get them ready to take on the Portable Media Center device. So at that point, what you've got is a device that's got your favorite TV shows, it's got a bunch of your favorite pictures and a bunch of your favorite music. My parents live down in Oregon, and we visit them a couple times a year with the kids, put the portable media center with the kid in the car. They can watch TV. And then when we get down to mom and dad's house, we break that out. We can hook it up to the television via simple AV cables.
Yeah.
And they can look at the pictures.
Sure.
And we can, you know, we can share those experiences with them real easily.
Yeah, and I think you guys also make the Movie Maker software that enables you to kind of assemble photographs into almost like a full motion video kind of a concept too. And I'm sure
that's
part of it too.
Yeah, there's actually two products.
Mm-hmm.
One is PhotoStory.
PhotoStory, that's the one.
That's the one that takes your still mm-hmm. photographs and does automatic panning and zooming and motion.
Okay,
you can add music.
That's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great product. And we also do make Movie Maker. And Movie Maker is for taking home movies out of your video camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like Steven Spielberg. You can throw those things together. You can add soundtracks and transitions, effects, and really create really nice home movies. So it's much less of a burden when people come to the house to show them your home movies because they don't have to look at the 20 minutes that I forgot to take the lens cap off and left the camera running in the camera bag.
Yeah.
Or it's recording the sidewalk as I walk along.
Yeah. Well, now let's talk a little bit about the Windows Media kind of radio tuner area, you know, a little bit, and not so much talk about kind of the content there, but let's talk about kind of the functionality of the player. And you guys have kind of transitioned a little bit from the Windows Media 9 series player, which was the prior version, in kind of supporting kind of a direct link to the Windows Media radio tuner section, which I know you guys have really built out with a lot of content. But you guys have changed over and you're now linking to another radio section. Why don't you kind of run down with us kind of the thinking behind that transition from pointing people to the radio tuner section over to a new area?
I think that, you know, streaming radio is a real interesting area. There's a lot of people doing really interesting things and really cool things, custom radio stations and radio stations based on artists that sound like this,
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, traditional radio just doing, you know, streaming of their broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to make sure that people were able to get best experience in radio. So we were trying to build a bridge between the subscription radio services, the traditional streaming radio, and this next generation of web-based radio. That was kind of what we were looking at, is finding the best way to tie all that stuff together.
Okay, are you guys thinking about kind of downloadable radio kind of concepts? You know, there's a big thing going on right now with the concept of podcasting. Have you heard about all that?
I've heard a little bit about podcasting. We look at those sort of emerging trends, and we listen to what our customers tell us.
Yeah.
If customers say, look, this is really kind of important to us, that's great. We do actually offer time-shifted radio listening through Media Center Edition if you have an FM tuner in that box. So there is some precedent for that, but
sure.
You know, we'll see where we go.
Yeah, well, you guys, I mean, it's an emerging thing. It's only been out for a couple of weeks now. I can't imagine you guys can move that quick with that, but it really seems like that the whole downloading thing, it's falling right along with, you know, music. People like to synchronize content. I just thought I'd ask you about it and see what, you know, if you guys had anything up your sleeve to go in that direction, because it's certainly a passion of ours with our show. Is we do a lot of download and synchronization with a lot of pocket PCs and, you know, and other types of media players, just like what you are. I mean, we're a content provider to the Sync & Go product. Won't you tell me probably one of the areas of the new media player that's probably the coolest that maybe most people don't realize or kind of hidden? I'm sure that, you know, you probably have your favorite little trick thing that you can do with the player to get content or whatever. And I've played with the player a little bit, but I'm sure you're more knowledgeable about it. Is there something about the player that, you know, our listeners can take away, you know, and say, wow, if I go do this, it's really going to be a cool thing?
Well, I tell you, so it's probably not a big deal, but I'll tell you my favorite feature of the player.
Okay.
This is in Player 10. So if you're going along and you're building a playlist, and sometimes you forget what's going to happen when you double-click, and you've got this playlist going, and you've got like 40 tracks in it, and then you double-click a track, and it clears your playlist and starts playing that track.
Sure.
So one of the things we've added is if that happens, you can hit the back button, like skip track on the bottom next to play, and it actually will restore your previous playlist, your previous now playing list, right where you were at. So if you were in the middle of a song, that song picks up right where you left off.
Oh, that's really cool.
And then we've also made it so you can customize the behavior of that double click so that you can actually double click instead of clearing the list and playing the song, you can just throw that song at the end of the list. So that's just one tip and trick that I really like. The other thing that, you know, I don't think people are aware of is that when you go to rip your music, that you really have multiple choices. You know, we mentioned the MP3, but I don't think that people realize that you've got choices in WMA as well. You can go with the standard WMA constant bit rate. We also do variable bit rate and lossless, and that you can set that up to, you know, optimize mm-hmm. your experience. And then after you've done that, you can set Media Player up to prepare your music in the background to transfer your portable device.
So what's the best way for a listener to get the new Media Player 10? Is it to go to Windows Update or visit the website, or what's the best way?
Well, both those ways work. You can get it as it's an update available off Windows Update. Go to windowsmedia.com and pick it up there as well. So either way, whichever way people prefer, however their preferred choice is there.
Well, Mike, thanks for talking to us.
I've enjoyed it very much, and thanks for having me on.
Is there any place on the Microsoft website that has a lot more information about the Player 10?
Yeah, you go to Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
All right.
It was great to have you on the show and speak with you about the Player. These guys have made tremendous strides in the Player over the last couple of years, and so wish you the most luck up there.
All right. Thanks for having us on, and thanks to all your listeners for their continued support.
We've been speaking with Mike Coleman, who's the lead product manager for Microsoft's Windows Media team, and he's been telling us all about the new Windows Media Player 10 software that's been recently released. If you want to go find out more information about the Windows Media Player, then go visit Microsoft at Microsoft.com or the WindowsMedia.com website. That's all the time we have this week for Web Talk Radio. We hope you come back and join us next week at the same time in the same place, or download us from webtalkradio.com, and you can take us with you wherever you go with your mobile player. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.